This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork. Refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer. Or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in. All with the style you want and reliability you can count on. So you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
And we are back with another episode of the Fans Loan Show. And there is so much to talk about today. I got a ton to break down. Be sure you have liked, share, and subscribe, particularly to the show. Big interviews coming up the rest of the week. Professor Glenn Deason returns to the show on Thursday, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson on Friday. So Big lineup coming up here. Again, be sure you're subscribed. That way you don't miss those episodes. On today's show, we have U.S. troops preparing for nuclear fallout. Israel wants the war to resume. The Lebanon talks are just a hoax. And will we get a deal? So starting off here, there was this very interesting tweet that was put out yesterday by IndoPACOM and also the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit, where they explain that the 11th MEU, which is on its way from Hawaii to the Middle East, engaged in chemical, biological, and nuclear radiation drills. Now, the reason that I think this is incredibly important, and you know, when I tweeted this out, people replied in the post and they said, hey, these are normal drills that the U.S. military can and or does and should do it. I do certainly agree with that. However, we should also take notice when there's about, I think, 4,200 U.S. troops on the USS Botzer Amphibious Group, which includes the 11th MEU, and they're going to the Middle East. As there's reports of two potential escalations that Donald Trump is considering. One is escalating the bombing campaign to include Iranian power plants, which could mean nuclear facilities. So is he talking about bombing one of Iran's nuclear reactors? But I think the more likely and the more concerning is that they're talking about doing a special operation mission inside of Iran in an effort to secure Iran's stockpile of 60% enriched uranium. You'll also often hear the number, they'll say between 450 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium Iran has in a stockpile somewhere. Exactly where it is unclear. There's a lot of reports that U.S. intelligence believes that was moved to the Isfahan facility in Iran. However, it's really unknown. There's some people that say, hey, it could still be buried in Fort Doe, where it was before the U.S. bombed that facility. However, in the days leading up to that attack, that's Operation Midnight Hammer, last June. There's a lot of video evidence that nuclear material was removed from that facility and then moved somewhere, again, believed to be Isfahan, but I'm not sure how sure the U.S. or Israel could possibly be where that is. Now, that 400 kilograms is roughly 1,000 pounds. And people have said that this would fit in roughly 16 scuba tanks, although these wouldn't be, you know, just regular scuba tanks. Obviously, they're meant not to carry oxygen, but nuclear material and highly enriched nuclear material at that. So we're talking about quite a bit of weight, quite a bit of volume of material that the U.S. is trying to secure. And it's also believed that if it is in Isfahan, that facility has since been bombed. And so there's the likelihood, I think, it's probably the case that there's going to have to be demolitions clearing done by the United States in order to just, you know, get through the tunnel network, get to the underground facility where that nuclear material is being held. And also there's the concern that that nuclear material, you know, what if one of or multiple of the, vats that it's stored in, that's being held in, has been damaged. And so you would obviously need the troops who are going to be involved in these operations, whether they're actually going on the ground in Iran or they're going to be receiving that material once it's brought out of the country, to be fully prepared to handle potentially loose radioactive material, right? That's not confined to a safe space. So I am very concerned that this is actually a real signal that Donald Trump is planning some kind of major escalation in this conflict, whether that is, again, the raid inside the country or bombing Iranian facilities and potentially nuclear facilities. I mean, this could really be catastrophic. Now, another point in all this is, along with the USS Botzer amphibious group in the 11th MEU, the U.S. is also dispatching the George H.W. Bush aircraft carrier strike group to the Middle East. And this aircraft carrier strike group is going to essentially be replacing, I believe that's the Ford that's now in port in Greece after what is reported to be a laundry fire burned for 30 hours and caused a significant amount of damage to the carrier. It's going to be out of the fight at least for another year, probably longer than that. You know, U.S. military repairs and things like this, they rarely finish ahead of schedule. All these things always run overtime. So Donald Trump is moving all these assets to the Middle East. And let's consider what happened the last two times the U.S. was in negotiations with Iran. That would have been, in spring and early summer of 2025, and then this past February. On both of those occasions, it seems that Donald Trump had already decided that he was going to war. This last time, we had the report on February 11th, that Donald Trump met with Benjamin Netanyahu, and at that time, the president was convinced that he was going to attack Iran. Multiple rounds of negotiations occurred after that. The Iranians put forward really reasonable deals, in fact, deals that Trump could have at least presented as being stronger than the Obama nuclear deal. They were trying to hand Donald Trump a real victory here, and he passed up on it because he had already decided to go to war. And what was the U.S. doing in February or in last, you know, April, May, early June before those attacks? We were moving massive amounts of military equipment into the Middle East. The same thing that we're seeing going on right now, along with the Edster troops. There's all kinds of open source data that point out there's just convoy after convoy after convoy of U.S. cargo carrying aircraft leaving the United States, landing in Europe, then traveling on from Europe to the Middle East. And so we are bringing a lot of military assets to the Middle East. If you look at Trump's pattern of behavior when it comes to Iran over the past year, it's clear that these negotiations are not about negotiating. They're about giving the United States time when Iran isn't attacking the U.S. to prepare ourselves militarily to launch a major escalation to this conflict. So I really don't like to be alarmist when talks are going on, when we're having reports that maybe this ceasefire is going to be extended. The Pakistani top, I think, defense minister or top general was in Iran just today meeting with the Iranian foreign minister. I mean, in some cases, these are real signs that these talks are progressing and that we could be nearing an end to this conflict. But at the same time, we had the same thing back in February when the Omani foreign minister, the man who was mediating the talks between the U.S. and the Iranians, came out and said, oh, we almost have a deal here. The Iranians put forward something very workable and reasonable. A lot of progress was being made. 2 days later, the U.S. was bombing Iran. And so I think, again, if we look at history, all these signals that suggest talks are moving in the right direction between the U.S. and Iran really don't relate to the reality of the situation and what Washington has planned. In some sense, you know, it seems that the Iranians are approaching diplomacy with the United States in the way that diplomacy is conducted around the world and has been conducted around the world, you know, since the end of World War II, where, you know, side sits down, they put forward proposals, negotiations happen in good faith. And, you know, it's almost like, think of Revolutionary War, the British Army lining up on the battlefield and, you know, just putting all their cards out on the table and then the Americans shooting them from the woods. Where here we had Donald Trump just completely breaking the norms of diplomatic behavior in order to further his military aims. And I really do think that's what we have going on here. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the president and what he's currently saying about the war in Iran. So let's move to our first clip of Donald Trump.
This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.
When you buy LG, you get so much more than just an appliance. You get more done, more cost savings, more peace of mind, and more control. Because LG appliances are designed to do more. Like washers and dryers with AI tech to take out the guesswork, refrigerators that fit in tight spaces and keep food fresher longer, or ranges with precise induction cooking and easy cleanup built in, all with the style you want and reliability you can count on, so you can get more from your home every day. LG appliances, so much more. Make life easier with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
Anticipation, Mr. President, that other countries will assist in this effort to blockade Iran and those...
Yeah, other countries are going to also...
Which countries, sir?
We don't need other countries, frankly, but... they've offered the services. We'll let it be known probably tomorrow.
Has the blockade started, sir?
Yeah, started at 10 o'clock.
So this just goes to show that they're, you know, as Larry Johnson really hammered into my head during the first month of this war, there is no plan. And it's so, the lack of a plan is so obvious that Donald Trump can't even answer a simple follow-up to a question that he had to know he was going to get. How could the president not be prepared to at least say, oh, we're talking with several nations, you know, maybe we got one or two countries to pledge that they would really support the United States doing this, or diplomats, something, anything. And he just completely reverses on what he said quite literally 5 seconds ago. That was a 20-second clip where Donald Trump contradicted himself from one question and then a follow-up. He can't even keep this straight at any point in time. So it shows the president is just flailing around. Now, if this was a sitcom, it would be absolutely hilarious if it wasn't just downright unbelievable and stupid, but we are talking about the real world here. And this kind of rhetoric, this kind of flailing around in policy has real implications. So I want to look at this new True Social post that Donald Trump has put out, where he is now threatening China because, again, he doesn't have any real policy when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz. He wrote, "China is very happy that I am permanently opening the Strait of Hormuz. I am doing it for them also and the world. This situation never happened again. They have agreed to send weapons. They have agreed not to send weapons to Iran. President Xi will give me a big fat hug when I get there in a few weeks. We are working together smartly and very well. Doesn't that be fighting? But remember, we are very good at fighting." So, you know, Donald Trump here is threatening China. He's saying that, hey, if you do something we don't like, we are going to fight you. And that is very dangerous rhetoric to have when the U.S. has just depleted almost all of its interceptor stockpile, right? If China really did want to militarily conquer Taiwan, now would be the time. And so if Donald Trump was smart, understood geopolitics and things like that, he would be doing everything possible to lower the temperature on with Beijing. Additionally, for the U.S. military's own needs, think about this. And as I've discussed on the show, all the rare earth minerals, most of them, a lot of the production facilities that are currently established are in China. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in the Trump administration about, oh, we're developing new sources for these rare earth minerals. But there are a lot of barriers and a lot of time to gain that done. Not only do you have to build these facilities, but one of the reasons that China is the only producer of some of these rare earth minerals is the process to refining them and getting them to the point where they're usable is really environmentally destructive. And a lot of countries have, you know, for various reasons, very strong environmental laws. And so they're not going to allow these kind of factories to be built in their countries. Or if they are, they're going to have to be built using new technologies, which means you're going to have, not only are you just trying to replicate the Chinese facility, say in the Philippines or Australia or somewhere in South America, but you have to actually redesign it so that it's not producing as much waste as the Chinese facility is. The U.S. is going to need these rare earth minerals to rebuild our military. I discussed on the show how gallium, almost all of it, is refined and sold by China. We need gallium to repair and to build new advanced radar systems because Iran has destroyed 12 of our most advanced radars in the Middle East. And so, again, we should not be provoking China here. And, of course, I can't bring up that True Social post when Donald Trump is saying that we're reopening the Strait of Hormuz for China. I'm not sure the Strait of Hormuz has ever been really closed for China. China's one of the few countries on Iran's list of friendly nations, I believe, along with Pakistan and the Philippines, which means that Iran is allowing Chinese vessels to cross the Strait of Hormuz. And I believe actually without paying a toll to the country of Iran. Iran has put countries in basically three nations for transit through the Strait of Hormuz. There's the enemy states, their ships are blocked. There's the neutral states, those ships pay a toll. And then there's the friendly states, which their ships are allowed to transit. China is among the friendly states, and so their ships are being allowed to transit the Strait of Hormuz. So that's, you know, kind of how that's working. So Donald Trump pretending that we're reopening the Strait of Hormuz for China, that this is a big win for China. China's really excited about it. Look, China is a very energy-dependent country. Their economy is going to function much, much better if the price of energy is cheaper. The blockage of the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, to most of the oil exiting the strait, even if only a small percentage of that oil did go to China anyways, the lack of production, taking all that oil off the market, is raising the global price of oil. And so China will be paying more for that reason. But I really don't know how Beijing is weighing this. To some degree, they may look at Iran like the U.S. looked at Ukraine. This is an opportunity to really weaken one of their geopolitical foes. If this conflict continues to drag on, you know, certainly the U.S. or China is going to be hurt by it. But the Gulf Arab states will all absolutely be devastated, and they will all be looking to leave Washington's orbit. And what is a country that has a lot of money, that's willing to go all over the world, rebuild destroyed infrastructure while, you know, giving out, you know, somewhat predatory loans and demanding, you know, kind of diplomatic kickbacks and other favors? Well, that's China. And so I think China, if this war continues and drags on and these countries really do end up being really, really degraded, and there's no chance of rebuilding the U.S. bases, they assess that rebuilding the U.S. bases actually makes them more of a target than it protects them, China could be in a real position to gain a lot of geopolitical power as a result of this war. And so there's a lot of calculations going on here for China. Additionally, the U.S. is spending its munitions and interceptors in the Middle East, means they can't ever go to Taiwan. Every Patriot missile that is fired in the Middle East makes it that much more difficult for the U.S. to ever get Patriot interceptors to Taiwan, something Beijing certainly doesn't want Taipei to have a lot of. Now, want to move on here and talk about the situation with Israel, because you know there's two parts to this whole agreement. Even if the U.S., even if Donald Trump is actually serious, if I'm wrong in my calculations that these negotiations are sincere, that Donald Trump really does want to bring an end to this conflict and is willing to negotiate on at least a reasonable enough ground to get a deal done with Tehran, Tel Aviv seems to have a veto. So we have this from the Israeli top general. This is the chief of staff of the IDF. And he says that he has approved attack plans for both Lebanon and Iran, which basically means the Israeli military now has a long list of targets that they are ready to hit in Tehran. And the second that they think there is even the faintest of yellow lights, not even a green light, just as long as the red light from Washington is removed, Israel is going to immediately act, and they are going to try to take out those targets. Next, I want to move to this clip of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu discussing his position on the matter.
Yesterday with Vice President J.D. Vance. He called me from his plane on the way back from Washington. He reported to me in detail, as the people of this administration do every day, on the development of the negotiations. In this case, the explosion in the negotiations, the explosion came from the American side, which was not willing to tolerate the blatant violation of the agreement to enter negotiations by Iran. Essentially, the agreement was that there would be a ceasefire and Iran would immediately open the crossings. They didn't do that. The Americans were not willing to accept it. He also conveyed to me that the central issue on the table from the perspective of President Trump and the United States is the removal of all enriched material and ensuring that there is no more enrichment in the coming years, and this could be for decades.
So two things here. I think the most important is just looking at how much influence that Benjamin Netanyahu at least thinks he has over the Americans, right? He's saying, now he initially says this in Hebrew, so maybe he is trying to signal just to the domestic audience, although, you know, Netanyahu is a savvy guy. He may be old, but he understands that AI translates everything instantly now. And when he makes a statement like this, people take notice that he's saying the vice president of the United States reported to him. That's not the way it's supposed to work. The vice president can report to the president of the United States. He can report to the American people. He does not, by definition, report to the leader of a foreign country. But that is the reality of the situation that we have. And Netanyahu is, you know, kind of showing his cards here a little bit, flexing his muscles, letting people know how much leverage he has over the Americans. Now, a separate point here is Netanyahu talking about removing all the enriched uranium for Iran. I think this kind of has two kind of key tactics that he's using here. One, he doesn't think the Iranians are going to agree to accept to giving up their stockpile of enriched uranium. I think there's probably a good number of reasons from this from the Iranian side. First of all, they have said that they are willing to dilute their stockpile back down to, I think, 3.6%, which is fuel grade. So from 60% to 6.3%. But the U.S. and Israel are demanding that Iran just give it over to the United States of America as a condition for ending the war. Iran probably wants to be able to dilute it back down because a lot of their nuclear enrichment infrastructure has been destroyed, and the country relies on nuclear power for its civilian energy and also for its medicine program in order to be able to sell their oil on the market and generate revenue that way. So, you know, that's kind of the Iranian economic model. That's why economically they would want to hold on to their enriched uranium. I'm sure also there's just a matter of national pride as well. If they're just handing it over to the Americans, that's going to be harder to sell as a victory. Now, maybe there's a little bit of a bridge here. Maybe there's a little bit of a window. The Russians have offered to take it. Maybe if Russia is willing to buy it from the Iranians and Iran could present it as, this is some new revenue that we got for this nuclear material. Or maybe they could, you know, give it to the Russians. They'll dilute it and give it back to the Iranians. Maybe a process like that could work to get this done. But I think Netanyahu's real angle here is setting a red line in the White House, in the public, that 60% uranium needs to be removed. And if it does, it means the Americans have to conduct a ground operation within Iran, assuming Iran's not willing to give it up, before the U.S. leaves the Middle East. Because right now we are in a position of a ceasefire. And if Donald Trump, which he quite possibly could do, decided that rather than sending the H.W. Bush and its aircraft carrier strike group into the Persian Gulf or the Arabian Sea, wherever he's going to position it, what if we brought not only the H.W. Bush, but also the Lincoln home, and we just decide that we're not fighting Iran anymore? And Israel, if they want to make a deal with Iran, they can make a deal with Iran. If they want to go to war with Iran, then Israel could deal with that problem. That's a situation that Israel don't want. So I think Netanyahu believes setting this line is going to help ensure that the Americans do end up escalating into deploying ground troops inside of Lebanon. Next up here, I want to touch on and talk about the situation in Lebanon. And this is the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. discussing kind of the negotiating process happening between the Israeli and the Lebanese governments.
I was honored to sit around a negotiating table with His Excellency Michelle Issa, United States Ambassador to Lebanon, and to Her Excellency Nada Hamadi, the Lebanese ambassador to Washington. We discovered today that we're on the same side of the equation, and that's the most positive thing we could have come away with. We are both united in liberating Lebanon from an occupation power dominated by Iran called Hezbollah. Lebanon is under their occupation, and we are suffering from their constant barrages of missiles and terror attacks trying to cross our border.
So what Israel is doing here is a very clever sleight of hand, because Israel is fighting a war in Lebanon. Now, they're fighting their war in Lebanon really against the people in southern Lebanon, but, you know, it's against Hezbollah. Now, Hezbollah is not the Lebanese military, right? It exists outside of the Lebanese government, outside of the control of the Lebanese government. Now, Hezbollah and the Shiites of Lebanon do hold some important positions in the Lebanese government, including Speaker of the Parliament. And so there is a lot of, you know, Shiite tied to Hezbollah influence within the Lebanese government, but the prime minister of Lebanon is a Shiite, a Sunni, excuse me, and the president is a Christian. And so these two factions are not necessarily aligned with Hezbollah. And so Israel is not negotiating right now with the party they're at war with in Lebanon. They're negotiating with the government of Lebanon that's actually, at least to some degree, opposed to Hezbollah. Now, I think Israel made a real mistake, or I guess it wasn't necessarily Israel's mistake, because Hezbollah ended up attacking Israel in response to the war against Iran. So the war against Iran would have been the ultimate mistake. But by Israel attacking and invading Lebanon the way they have in recent days, I think it's going to make it a lot harder for the Lebanese government to actually do anything about Hezbollah. And so really what I think Israel is doing here is they're trying to give the appearance to the American people, to the American government, that they're engaged in some kind of peace process in Lebanon, but they're not at all. They're actually encouraging the Lebanese government to go to war with Hezbollah. So they're trying to basically have a civil war. That way Israel could seize the southern part of Lebanon without as much fighting, while the Lebanese government does, you know, most of the ground fighting, most of the dying against Hezbollah. I don't think it's going to work, but I did just want to line out and explain the Israeli play there. Last up here, I have this clip of J.D. Vance discussing the negotiations.
Ceasefire that's in place. I think it's 6 or 7 days old. Right now, the ceasefire is holding. And what you're seeing is, well, the president wants to make, he doesn't want to make like a small deal. He wants to make the grand bargain. And what he's basically offering to Iran is very simple. And frankly, it's something that no president has, I think, has had the ability to offer. He said that if you're willing to act like a normal country, we are willing to treat you economically like a normal country. He doesn't want a small deal. And that's one of the reasons why, one, I'd say in Pakistan, we made a ton of progress. But the reason why the deal is not yet done is because the president, he really wants a deal where Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon, Iran is not state sponsoring terrorism, but also the people of Iran can thrive and prosper and join the world economy. And that's the trade that he's offering. He's saying, if you guys...
So pause it there, because he's saying that Iran needs to act like a normal country. The thing that they are accusing Iran of doing that's outside the scope of a normal country is Iran has a nuclear enrichment program, which means they take, you know, the uranium and they enrich it to a higher level. Now, Iran has only ever used their enrichment program for civilian purposes, either to, you know, develop fuel or fuel rods to feed their nuclear reactors, or in their medicine program to make medical isotopes out of, I think, 20% enriched uranium is the level there. So that is what Iran is doing. Now, this is actually, in two ways, a very normal thing. One, under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, and a treaty that almost every country in the world, I think Israel, like South Sudan and North Korea, are the only countries not party to the NPT. But under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, every country does have the right to enrichment for civilian purposes. Now, the Trump administration used to say, this was in the lead of, this was the propaganda for Operation Midnight Hammer. Oh, no normal countries, no other countries do this, only Iran. Well, that's actually a lie. There's, I think, Germany, Japan, Brazil, and Argentina all have nuclear enrichment programs, and obviously none of those countries have nuclear weapons programs. So Iran is acting as a normal country with a nuclear enrichment program and not having a nuclear weapons program. The country that isn't acting like a normal country is the United States of America. It's unbelievable that this was only 3 months ago, but we're 3 months coming off of a raid, an attack on another country where we just kidnapped their president and put him in one of our jails in a court system on some made up charges. We actually charged the leader of another country over buying and owning weapons, right? It's completely insane. He's the commander in chief of the military. You know, if Donald Trump was charged by China for buying 100 AR-15s or something like that, that would obviously be laughably stupid. And yet that's what they charged Maduro with when they brought him to a U.S. court. We're in the middle of a war where during negotiations, the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran. So it's very obviously here the United States that is acting like a normal country. I mean, J.D. Vance just got done 24 hours ago, saying that the U.S. was engaging in economic terrorism by blockading the Iranian blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, because if Iran's going to use economic terrorism, so are we. Let's keep rolling with Vance.
He said, if you guys commit to not having a nuclear weapon, we are going to make Iran thrive. We're going to make it economically prosperous, and we're going to invite the Iranian people into the world economy in a way they haven't been in my entire life. And that's the kind of Trumpian grand bargain that the president has put on the table. Man, we're going to keep on negotiating and try to make it happen, because it would be great for the world. It'd be great for our country. It'd be great for everybody. So I'm going to keep on fighting to make it happen.
So my article that I wrote this week for antiwar.com, I titled Art of Failure. And what I basically go through is how Donald Trump, every single time he's involved in international negotiations, he's always going for this grand bargain, right? With the North Koreans, he tried to get a grand bargain. With nuclear weapons, he tried to get a grand bargain. And nothing ever works, right? This idea that we are going to go into negotiations with maximalist demands. If a country doesn't comply, we will sanction them or we will attack them into submission. And then once they're willing to agree to everything that we have offered, we're going to come in and demand 20% more. That's what Donald Trump thinks is the best negotiation tactics. And in maybe in New York City real estate, where he has the politicians in his pockets, he knows all the different bureaucrats and regulators and who he needs to pay off and, you know, how much he could screw every person and how he could use the courts to his favor. Maybe that works. It does not work in geopolitics. It simply does not. And we have seen it time and time again. That's why there's not a New START treaty anymore. That's why there's not an INF treaty or an Open Skies treaty. That's why the U.S. is at war in Ukraine. That's why the U.S. is at war with Iran. That's why we haven't gotten a deal done with the Koreans. That's why all of his trade wars or trade deals always end up falling apart, because Donald Trump cannot actually negotiate. If J.D. Vance thinks that the U.S. is just going to maintain these maximalist hardline positions, and if it comes to it, we'll just go back to war with Iran, and after another pummeling blow of strikes, and this time we hit their bridges and their civilian infrastructure, and we send our troops in, and we take the enriched uranium, that then the Iranians are going to be on their knees and come begging. But that isn't how the real world works. The Iranians aren't just going to fold. And despite what Donald Trump says, the Iranians still have real cards to play. For the most part, Ansar Allah in Yemen, the Houthis, have largely stayed out of this war. But they have shown the ability to shut down the Bab al-Mandab Strait, the linkage between the Gulf of Aden, the Indian Ocean, and the Red Sea. They could shut down one half of the Red Sea shipping lane if they so choose. And they have a good relationship with Tehran. And Tehran believes that if they ask Ansar Allah to do it, then Ansar Allah is going to do it. And so Iran has a lot of ability to fight back here. They have a lot of other targets that they could hit. They could really just completely shut down the Strait of Hormuz and say, you know, this is going to hurt the Iranian economy. This is going to hurt the world economy more. The world is going to blame the United States of America for it. And, you know, these are all cards that Iran has left to play. This is all things that Iran could do. And it may be that if we continue this war, the U.S. is going to be in a much, much worse strategic position whenever we return to the table with Iran than if we just take a deal down. This is a lesson that the Americans should have learned with dealing with the Ukrainians when they had a really reasonable deal from the Russians in the lead up to the war and in the first months of the war to end that conflict in exchange. Russia was going to give back the Donbass or not take the Donbass. They wanted to take in Kherson and Zaporizhia. There wouldn't be a million dead people. And all Russia was really looking for was Ukraine to agree to not join NATO. And they refused that very reasonable demand. And now Ukraine is going to lose at least 20%, if not more, of its territory when this is all said and done. So take the deal now, J.D. Vance, although I'm sure he is not in a position to do it. You know, he has his masters in both Washington and Tel Aviv, who will tell him that he can't actually make any reasonable deal, and so this war is going to continue. All right, that's where I am going to wrap it up for today. Want to remind everybody to check out the show, or subscribe, share, and like the show. I saw a very active chat today. I couldn't really keep up with it during the clip, so I'll have to check out later to see what you guys are saying. But I really appreciate everybody tuning in. This is a growing channel, so if you haven't already, subscribe, share it out. And big interviews coming up later in the week. Again, Professor Glenn Deason tomorrow, 4:45. Friday, we're going to start just a little bit early at 4:30, and we will have Larry Wilkerson on the show, Colonel Larry Wilkerson. So looking forward to both of those interviews, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com. This episode sponsored by Maximus Tribe. You train, you track, you eat right. But if you're over 40, you've felt it. The results don't match the effort anymore. That's not willpower, it's biology. Hormones drop, metabolism slows, your body stops responding the way it used to. Maximus is the online clinic that reverses your decline with prescription performance medicines, GLP-1s, testosterone, and peptides that reduce belly fat, restore energy, and boost recovery. Over 50,000 high performers have already broken through their plateaus. If you're ready to turn your hard work into measurable results, go to MaximusTribe.com. That's MaximusTribe.com.